you know, I think if choral music is going to continue to blossom as it has done in, say, the last 10 or 20 years, then pushing the boundaries of the repertoire is a very, very important thing to do.
That's Barnaby Smith. He's the artistic director and a countertenor in the British vocal ensemble Vacis 8. And they are pushing the boundaries. As you'll hear in this edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, as we explore their new recording, it's called Enchanted Isle. I'm Julie Amacher. Enjoy. I'm talking with Barnaby Smith, one of the founding members of the British vocal ensemble Vacis 8. Barnaby, you have a new recording out, and on this new recording, you also have a new baritone who's joined the ensemble. Could you introduce us to Christopher Moore, please?
I can, yes. Chris has rather funnily taken exactly the same journey through his studies as our bass, Johnny. He was a choral scholar at Trinity College, Cambridge, and he came to audition for the group, I suppose now about almost a year ago, and we were struck immediately by the not just the beauty of his voice, but also, I suppose, the integrity of his musical personality as well. So it's a great delight to welcome him to the team. And actually also on this disc, for the first time on record, we have our new mezzo-soprano or contralto, who's Katie Jeffries-Harris. Those of your listeners who are really familiar with Vacis 8 will know that in the past we've been two sopranos, two countertenors, two tenors, a baritone and a bass. And my countertenor colleague, Chris, who'd been in the group for over a decade, recently made, I'm not sure if it's a sideways or an upwards move, into our management office. And as part of finding a successor for him, we opened that audition to both male singers, so countertenors, and also to females, and we actually have ended up appointing a lady. So for the first time in Vacis 8, we have three female singers and five male singers, and you can also hear Katie on this recording.
Wow, thank you for mentioning that, because I didn't catch that. How do you go about finding a new voice when one of your members decides to move on into a new venture?
Well, it's a pretty lengthy process. I mean, the first thing to say is people always ask us that, thinking that trying to find a new singer, it can be a problem that someone's leaving. I mean, I actually think that change is a really great thing in a group like ours, because one of the difficulties of it is that it's the same eight singers all the time, which has so many benefits, but also it can get a little bit insular, and actually having a little bit of fresh blood every now and again can really liven things up. So it's very nice from that perspective. In terms of finding somebody, we're generally looking for three things. We're looking, of course, for a beautiful voice. We're also looking for a musical personality, someone who brings something very interesting and colourful to the ensemble. And then, of course, a personality that we feel we can get along with socially and off the stage is also very important. I think in terms of how we think about appointing a new singer, the sort of, I suppose, almost the logical thing, because a group like ours is known for, in inverted commas, its sound, you know, it's logical to think, well, we must find a singer who fits that sound. But actually the way we tend to go about it is we try to find an interesting voice that's interesting in its own right, with a singer behind it who can perhaps work that sound into the group, or indeed a singer who has such a beautiful voice that the group can then, with the other seven members, can actually work out how we can change our singing to fit it in. So that's the kind of things we're looking to test. And in terms of how we do it, it's across a number of rounds. And the very first thing that happens is, you know, people submit their resumes, and with that we ask for a couple of recordings so we can hear their voices on tape. We normally get, you know, anywhere from 150 to 500 applications, depending what role it is that we're looking to fill. But we then listen to those applications and pick maybe normally the best 50. If there's a lot of applications, maybe as many as 80. And we see those singers, and I set a couple of solo songs. So At the moment, we're looking for new tenors, and I've asked them to sing Comfort Ye in Every Valley from Handel's Messiah, and also Maria from Bernstein's West Side Story. And so they come in and they sing those two pieces to us. And, you know, that it gives us an opportunity to hear their instrument and, you know, without the confines of having to sing in a group or that kind of thing, just listening to them sing is the very first step. From there, anybody whose voice we think could fill the role, we ask them to come and sing with the group. And they come and they spend 15 or 20 minutes just taking the place of the singer whose role they're going to fill. And immediately we get the idea from that of who sort of fits into the group and who, you know, who is perhaps the right musician that we can work with. And normally we maybe see 20 to 30 people at that part of the process, and it's very rare that we get any more than sort of four or five people who we then carry on to a final round. And that final round is probably the most extensive round. They would have a sort of job interview because they're going to be employed by the organisation that runs Vouchers 8, the foundation that runs Vouchers 8. So they have that kind of formal part. But then the musical part sort of is aimed really at building up to a performance. So we invite sort of 30 people to come to a final performance session, and those people, as you know, are managers, record labels, PR, all those kinds of things, and also some friends and family. And we build a sort of a rehearsal period that's just over a couple of days to really offer those candidates the opportunity to, I suppose, make their performance as good as they can, to hone their performance as though it was the first concert they were ever going to give in Vouchers 8. So say we've got five candidates, we would give these five performances back to back to this audience, and then the audience will sit down and have a chat about each of the candidates and perhaps come up with their preferred appointment, and the group will do the same thing, and we compare the results and we see what we've got. So, I mean, that's a long-winded answer, because it's, I suppose the answer is, it's quite a long-winded process. But at the end of the day, you know, the brand of Vouchers 8 is ultimately the people who are in it. So it's a very important decision, and so being thorough, I think, is crucial.
It sounds like this needs to be a reality TV show, this process.
It could be, and actually we have had people in the past suggest that we should film it from beginning to end and make a couple of
episodes. Or do a documentary or something. It's yeah. That sounds really intense. Now, you said you're looking for tenors. Is someone leaving the group,
yes,
or are you just adding new tenors?
So Sam is retiring from his singing duties at the end of this season. And he is actually excitingly going to be running our scholarship program. So we have the group is run by a foundation which we set up when we began the group 14 years ago. And that is a foundation based in London called the VCM Foundation. And we're now also set up as a 501c3 here in the US. And that's VCM USA. And on both sides of the pond, we have these scholarship programs, these professional development opportunities. And when I first set up the scholarship program, which would have been about 5 years ago, I sort of wanted just to offer eight young singers a few professional opportunities across the year in the hope that it would enhance their skills a little bit. And that has now blossomed somewhat. And there seems to be great demand for this kind of opportunity. And so Sam is going to be taking that on. He's been running it for the past couple of years, but we're working to get funding to grow that program on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. And then alongside that, he also wants to celebrate his personal voice a little bit more. And so he's going to go and do some solo singing. And we're very, very excited for him. And he's been a fantastic member of the ensemble. And not only is he a fantastic singer, he's also a brilliant colleague. So we're going to miss him very much.
Wow. It's very cool how all these other opportunities seem to open up for the members of the ensemble, thanks to your different foundations and things. Barnaby, let's talk about the new recording, Enchanted Isle. There is definitely an atmosphere that's being created here. Could you describe what you're hoping we'll experience as we're listening to this recording?
Well, when I listen to music, I hear colours. And what we've tried to do with this album is we want people to hear pictures. And those pictures specifically are based around the sort of vistas of our home in the UK. So the idea really is that all of this music paints a landscape portrait of our home, our Enchanted Isle back in the UK. And that's the kind of nucleus of the programme.
The repertoire seems to be a melding of all the styles for which Voces 8 is known, everything from classical to popular, traditional, and even a little video game music. But then it's done in your style. Can you talk a little bit about how you do that, how you get your style to come through in these pieces?
Yes, well, I think one of the really important things is the arrangers that we work with, because a lot of the music doesn't appear, as you suggest, in its original format. A lot of the time we will take a song from another idiom and work with different arrangers to sculpt those pieces into unaccompanied vocal music, so a cappella vocal performances that I think really also specifically match the voices that we have in Voces 8 and the sounds that we make as a group. And also in addition, which is really nice, occasionally we add some instruments to that as well, depending on the sonorities that we want to explore within each of those particular songs. It's a really creative process. You know, so much of the time in singing in England especially, we've been brought up in this wonderful cathedral tradition where you might just walk in and have some music put in front of you and you're just asked to sing it. But actually, one of the really nice things about the process we've been going through with this disc and with our arrangements in general is that we get to work with the arranger to create new works, in essence. So, of course, the music already has been written in its original form and is known by people, but actually I do feel that these arrangements are almost a world premiere commissions as much as anything else, which is exciting.
The opening piece was written by the British composer Rebecca Dale. You worked with her on your last recording, Winter. Tell me about this arrangement of this opening piece, and I would love it if you would pronounce it for me as well.
I'd love to be able to pronounce it. I think it's Soe. That's my
personal... Oh, just like it looks.
Yes, Soe, a two-syllable word. Rebecca's a fantastic composer and is one of the leading lights in our sort of vista of composers in the UK. And of course, absolutely tremendous, especially given the landscape of the 21st century, of course, that she's also a female composer, which is something in the UK that we're really trying to champion at the moment to try and find some equality in that sector. And this particular song was found for an album that Rebecca released a few years ago called The Isle of St. Kilda. And she has reimagined it in this instance for a cello playing the melody and Voces 8 accompanying it. Matthew Sharp, who's played on some of our previous records, is an incredible cellist. And one of the things I love about his playing is the humanity in it. He's actually an opera singer as well as a cellist. And the way he makes the instruments sing, I think, really fits. One of my overriding memories of the session when we recorded this piece was the very end of the work, where there's this chord progression. And actually, Rebecca was writing that as we were singing it. She actually ended up completely changing it and rewriting it in the session, so it really was a very creative process.
There is another young female musician who joins you on this recording. She is a young Irish singer, only like 21 years old, if I calculated correctly.
Yeah, this is another incredible story, really. Siobhan is a Gaelic singer from Ireland, and when we were putting the disc together, of course, looking at all of these songs that were open for us to choose, a lot of them fell into that tradition. And of course, with that tradition, not only is it specialist vocal style with all the inflection in the singing, but there's also the language. And we sort of had, know, a go at singing some of it, and it was by no means bad, but of course it was not 100% authentic. And our record label Decca suggested that they knew of this singer that they'd been, you know, sort of watching for some time, wondering how they might be able to get her onto disc. And again, it just seemed like the perfect opportunity. So Shabelle came over, and a really nice thing once again is that the music was really written in the moment. We had the arrangers in the room, so the arrangements were written in advance, but then a lot of it was significantly changed during the recording session. And of course, Shabelle doesn't come from the same tradition as us, so it was a very interesting process asking her to take this copy of sheet music and try and fit her vocals over this written arrangement. And it was interesting both ways, because for her to have to fit, ultimately, with, in inverted commas, a choral accompaniment, where normally she might have fitted over the top of, say, a keyboard instrument, where there's just one player who can, in many ways, just follow her. There's actually eight of us, so we'll always try to follow her, but it's never going to be as instinctive or as reactive as if it's just one person having to do it. So we had to consider that. And then she also, of course, had to consider how she would sing in order that it would be both, you know, true to the style that she is from and authentic to the style and tradition that she sings in, but also fit with Voces 8. And I think, actually, if you ask me what my favourite track was on the whole album, the track she sings on, which is called Carrick Fergus, I think would definitely be one of my top three choices. But if you'd asked me when she first walked in the room and started singing with us, I'd have said, oh, I'm not sure this can work. So it's always fascinating, I think, that some of the things that you think won't work or can't work or shouldn't work actually often come out in the wash being the best things. So yeah, we're very proud of it, actually.
What's interesting, too, is I was just thinking about your audition process and how you're never quite sure how that new person is going to mix with the group. But then by bringing in a guest singer, you were facing the same thing, and it all worked out pretty well.
Exactly, yes. So mm-hmm. it was a leap of faith, and on both sides, for her and for us. And it's, yeah, you know what they say, the higher the risk, the better the reward.
The Barber Agnus Dei is on this recording. That would fall more along the traditional classical lines. Tell me about this arrangement.
I would say, from a programmatic standpoint, this is probably the biggest risk on the disc, because it doesn't really fit the theme in any other way than the sonority of the work, which I think, you know, I grew up actually in the northwest of the UK in a beautiful spot called the Lake District, and I had a bedroom window which looked out, and you could just see about 10 or 20 miles in the distance, the highest hills in England. And this, we all know Barber's Agnus Dei because it's actually his adagio for strings. So we all know that melody. And it reminds me of the vista out of my bedroom window when I was literally a 5 or 6 year old boy. And so that's about as much as I can tie it to the program itself. It is a masterpiece, of course, as a work. And one of the things for us as an ensemble is, how do we take this work that's originally written for a large-scale orchestra and translate that into eight voices? So, of course, Barber did a lot of the work for us, setting the music, but even then we had the problem that there's only two singers per part and these phrases are very, very long. And so making music and creating shape and creating enough contrast and colour was a real challenge. And I would actually say it's probably the biggest challenge the group has ever taken on CD. And I think it's the track I'm most proud of that we've ever made. But it's such a beautiful piece, and I feel almost ashamed that I have to say it's a technical challenge because it is such a beautiful piece. But I hope one day I'll be able to listen to it personally beyond that technical challenge. But it's a great piece, and I'm really proud that it's made it onto the album.
I thought it was fun to find Radiohead on this recording, the Pyramid Song, which is a very, gosh, it's a very haunting piece.
It is, and this was the idea of our label, Decca. And, you know, we are always open to suggestions for new songs. And again, a lot of the credit here has to go to the guy who arranged it. His name's Jeff Lawson, and he's done arrangements across our past few albums. I actually never really knew quite how big the following of Radiohead was. I mean, of course, I was aware of them as a band, and I remember actually once when we were singing a festival down in the south of France. This is probably almost 10 years ago now. We were staying in a hotel, and in the villa next door, Radiohead were staying there because they were headlining at a big pop festival. So we sort of have a very tenuous link to them in the fact that we were probably about 30 meters away from them for a week once.
So through osmosis, really nice. You absorb this music.
There you go. And again, it's really nice, and it's been set with violins and also the harp. And, you know, I think if choral music is going to continue to blossom as it has done in, say, the last 10 or 20 years, then pushing the boundaries of the repertoire is a very, very important thing to do. And I'm really pleased that that track, I really feel, is something new and different and has been accepted very well since the album has been released.
That's the one that I have to keep going back to and listening to again and again. I found myself starting right there in the middle of the recording. You have a piece by Thomas Addis, O Albion, which actually comes originally from a string quartet. I found that pretty intriguing.
Yes, it does. And we chose to set it to some poetry. And again, a lot of credit must go to the arranger because this is, in essence, a new composition. And it was very interesting working with Thomas himself. He didn't arrange it, the arranger is Jim Clements, but Thomas, because we were taking the score and removing it so far from his original intention, was very keen to be involved in that creative process. And we talk a lot as singers about impersonating instruments when we sing. And because this originally is a score for a string quartet, the way that the lines work, they're quite angular, that's how I would describe them, compared to how you might write a sung line. So there's some parts that go like da, 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 da. All this kind of stuff. Very, very challenging to sing. And actually, as a violin player myself, when I'm singing it, I can really feel my right arm moving with the string crossings. And so we work quite a lot on that to achieve, again, a very haunting effect.
There's also a beautiful prayer on this recording from a Minnesota-based composer, Jake Runnestad. Let my love be heard.
Yes, I mean, Jake's an extraordinary young composer, and I was very pleased to find out that he's written the big commission for the American Choral Directors Association this year. I think it's actually the first piece of his that we've sung as an ensemble, and I mean, it certainly won't be the last. It's very prayerful. I'd encourage your listeners to really go and sit down with the text for this one, but then it's got this extraordinary moment in the middle of the piece where the upper four voices have this almost cascading, but it's cascading upwards. So I suppose this lifting. That could definitely be the end of the piece, but one of the things I love about it is that chord just stops. bang. And when we sing it live, people are like, oh, should we clap now? And then it's got this extra page on the end, which just brings the piece full circle back to the beginning. Incredibly beautiful text. You know, let my love be heard. Angels, where you soar up to God's own light, take my own lost bird on your hearts tonight. And as grief once more mounts to heaven and sings, let my love be heard whispering in your wings.
I do want to ask you about the piece that closes out the recording, because it's a modern Scottish folk ballad by Dougie MacLean called Caledonia.
Yes, and this actually has a nice story behind it, because it was arranged by our tenor, Blake, who's, as you may or may not know, an American, and he moved over to the UK to take this position in Voces 8 a few years ago. And ever since he moved, he's been incredibly obsessed, I would even say, certainly interested in Scotland and the beauty of Scotland. And I think this song encapsulates everything that is Scotland to Blake, who has now indeed moved to live in Scotland. So he's singing in the group and living up in Edinburgh. This song is really, I would say, the modern national anthem of Scotland. And Blake tells this story about, you know, if ever you go out to the pub in an evening in Scotland and it comes to the last orders, the bell rings and everybody will start performing this. When I say performing, he describes it as attempting this particular song. And the guy who records Voces 8 is a guy called Dave Hynett. He's our sound engineer. And he says that the final verse of this, which is just four-part harmony, is his the favourite thing he ever gets to do with Voces 8, is just to sit there and listen to the groups just singing basic four-part harmony. And he said he will always remember this particular session because of the beauty of how the song ends. One of the nice things about it is that it resonates also with the group, because Dougie MacLean wrote it when he was sitting on the beaches of Normandy in France, looking towards the UK and missing home. And of course, as a group that travels a lot, as grateful as we are for the opportunities that we have to travel, we do of course miss home. So it resonates with us on that level as well.
Let me tell you that I love you, and I think about you all the time. Caledonia, you're calling me, and now I'm going home.
Barnaby Smith talking about the new recording Enchanted Isle by Voces 8. That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.